Thank you very much. First of all, I would like to tell you that I am delighted once more to be in Padova and to be close to Professor Antonio Papisca, because he is one of the pioneers of human rights, pioneers to exercise, full exercise of human rights in order to build peace and to change this terrible proverb from the beginning of the times that says that si vis pacem para bellum, if you wish peace, prepare war. And we have permanently, always under male power, this must be said, always absolute power in the hands of some males, we have followed si vis pacem para bellum. And he was one of the first in 1981 that said, no, now we must try to have paths for peace. Yes, this is exactly what I want. And if we can summarize what I am going to tell you this morning, I can read this. L'Università degli Studi di Padova promuove l'elaborazione di una cultura fondata sui valori universali quali il diritto umani,
la pace, la salvaguardia dell'ambiente, la
solidarietà. I think that is very important because sometimes we need to summarize what we are going to say. And says, fondata sui valori universali per tutti gli uomini. Quali i diritti umani, la pace, la salvaguardia dell'ambiente e la solidarietà internazionale. Well, this is finally the summary of, I am sure, what we are going to tell you this morning, most of us, because all the human rights are based in one, and this is at the beginning of the wonderful UNESCO Constitution, because it was written in a moment of immense human tension, after this terrible war, with genocide, with Holocaust, and at this moment, those that were writing the Charter of the United Nations and the Constitution of UNESCO that was founded in November the same year, 1945, they said that all human beings are equal in dignity. If we really understand this and we believe that this is the foundation of all the human rights, all the human beings are equal in dignity. Whatever is the color of the skin, ideology, religion, ethnia, all gender, all the human beings are equal in dignity. And dignity, by the way, is the first article of this wonderful Charter of Fundamental Rights in the European Union in the year 2000. If you see, it is said, first of all, dignity, and afterwards, the supreme right to life, etc. But, you know, it was a pity, because in the year 2000, altogether with the Charter, the Earth Charter is another wonderful document. I recommend you to read it, because is really an excellent guide. But at the same time, as I was telling you, there was this fantastic Charter of Fundamental Rights of the European Union. I am sure that most of the persons that today have in their hands the European Union governance have never read it. Because, you know, it's terrible to imagine that we have a monetary union. We have not a political union, we have no an economic union, we have no a fiscal or a tax federation, we have nothing, only money. And this is the opposite to this wonderful, believe me, charter that was written precisely when we were at the dawn of a new millennium and a new century. Therefore, Professor Antonio Papisca, many thanks for all you have done. Many thanks for all what you are doing, and I consider you as a champion of peace. You have inspired many things, and when I had the immense responsibility and honor of becoming elected Director General of UNESCO, I'll always have in mind Padova and Antonio Papisca. Professor Director. You see that today we are under the guidance of Direttore Marco Mascia. And I also like to pay tribute to you because, I repeat, I consider that we need today, more than ever in the past, we need to have some references in our path to peace. And therefore, I always like not only to tell you that we are delighted to be here in this place, etc., but also to wish the center of Padova all the successes that you deserve. Now, I have been presented by my friend Brown. I have here this wonderful lady called Ingeborg Breiner. And there you have Colin Archer. He has already been talking at the beginning. They represent one, well, they had the Nobel Award in 1910. Yes, for many years. But the International Peace Bureau today deserves also to be highly commended. Why? Because, and this I insist a lot, we have too many diagnoses, but we have not treatments. We have many think tanks throughout the world presenting diagnoses, but what we need is timely treatments. I remember one day, perhaps was in the 70s, I went to Madras in India as a scientist because there is a very important center of Swaminathan. And when coming, I went to pay tribute to Indira Gandhi. And she was a wonderful woman. She told me, Professor Mayor, please, now you are coming to Madras and you will come back here. Do not come back with another diagnosis on India. Do not come back to tell me another problem. I have thousands of problems. Please come back with one solution. And this is today what we need. We need solutions. We need to apply these solutions timely. And I insist in timely because precisely what I am going to tell you today is that as a scientist, we must warn. We must warn that now we are arriving in some potentially irreversible process to a point of no return. And this, for all of us, for this generation, is an immense responsibility. The Pope Francis has recently said in his encyclical Laudato Si, he said, when we say now, today is today, not tomorrow, because tomorrow can be too late. And this is exactly the title of my first book. When I was a young scientist, I was always dedicated to analysis at the moment of birth of the children because I was a specialist in the neuron system in the children at the moment of birth. And what we need always is to treatment timely because if this treatment is not made before 1 week, the mother was protecting this deficiency in the child, then is the disease, the deterioration of the neuronal system is already reversible. Now we are with the responsibility. Tomorrow can be too late. President Obama has said also recently that he said this generation is the first one to deal with climate change and the last one that can solve it. Here are a lot of young people. This is our responsibility with you. We cannot give you the legacy of an earth with the habitability deteriorated. This is impossible to imagine. Therefore, we must today We, our generations in plural, we must be responsible. And what we must do now is to tell to the world as a whole that all these things of the debt and the governance here in Europe, all these things doesn't matter. This is not important. What is important is that we have social aspects that are with perhaps points of no return. We have environmental issues in which we have points of no return. We have all these challenges. And the answer to the question is, there is a solution. There is a solution. I remember also when President Lula of Brazil, he said, no more protestas. We need propuestas. No more criticism. What we need now is concrete proposals. Why? Because tomorrow can be late. And during many years, I have also, as a scientist, I remember when I went, I was already Director General of UNESCO, I went to a very big meeting in Atlanta, in the United States, where of the Association of Physicists in this country. And the Nobel laureate Jensen, that was the person that was presenting us the meeting, said, in one single projection, said inertia. And he said, this is our enemy. Inertia is our enemy. Why? Because what we must do is to do what the nature is doing every day before us. We must evolve. We must always keep what must be always present is this, as it is said in UNESCO's constitution, the ethical principles that must guide humanity. This we must have always. Justice, freedom, solidarity. UNESCO says intellectual and moral solidarity as well. Solidarity is not only to help, it's to share fully, to share our emotions, our experience, our knowledge with the others. And, of course, dignity, equal dignity. Therefore, we have these four elements that must be at the core of all our decisions. Therefore, we have evolution in which we keep what must be kept and we change what must be changed. And if we have no evolution, we will have revolution. The difference between evolution and revolution is the art of responsibility. We must be responsible. At this moment, we must be responsible. And therefore, we must tell all those that are only thinking in markets, we must tell to them that now we must have a pause. And we must deal with these immense challenges that we have before us. Can we? Until now, the answer was no. Until now, the answer was no. Because we, 99.9% of the human beings, we were normally being born, living, and dying in some square kilometers. We were unable to express ourselves. We were silent. We were fearful. Why? Because we were isolated. We didn't know what was happening in the other continents. And this is only 40 years ago. I mean, I am not talking to you about the origin of the history. The women did not exist at all. And we were, I repeat, obedient. We were persons that were unable to express themselves, to participate. It's for this that democracy has been so fragile, because democracy has been based on to be counted from time to time. Every 4 or 5 years, we are counted. 1, 2, 3, favor, against, and afterwards. We are not taking into account at all during the next years. And participation is the main pillar of democracy. And to participate, we must express ourselves permanently. And we must not only be counted, we must be taken into account permanently. This is democracy. Therefore, we were not living democracy. We are not living democracy today. But now, from 20 years ago, now the things have changed. And it is for this that I consider that now, yes, we can. Now, yes, we can. President Kennedy in the year 63, the June, remember that he was killed, perhaps because of this. He said, I am told that peace is impossible. I will demonstrate that it's feasible. I am told that disarmament is impossible. I will demonstrate that it's feasible. And he added, because there is no any challenge beyond the human distinctive capacity to create. This is what must be our hope. Every single human being, unique human being, is able to create, is able to invent, is able to discover, is able to anticipate, is able to reflect. And precisely what we want is that there is no any in the future, any person acting at the dictate of anybody, acting under dogma, under fundamentalism, never. Never more. Now we can express ourselves. And this is one of the things that we must recognize that has been the digital technology that has given us the possibility not only to know, but only, and very important, to act according to our own views, and we can express these views and we can participate permanently. In the cyberspace, there is no doubt that now we have the possibility of telling we the peoples. Now, yes, now we the peoples, because as Colin Archer has said before, the charter that entered into force now 70 years ago, it is said this wonderful beginning that has the solution today. What it is said there? It is said that we the peoples, we have decided to save the succeeding generations from the horror of the war. It's fantastic. We the peoples, and what we decide, the people, is to build peace. Until this moment was always war. Now we decide to build peace. And why we do this? Why? Because of the future generations. These future generations that now we have forgotten, that now the markets have forgotten. Now we must replace and put as the center of our activity that we have every day in our conscience, that we are citizens of the world. Because now, yes, now we know what happens in the world. We know what is the situation around the world. And then we can act as world citizens. We are not anymore confined in some square kilometers. Now we are not invisible as we were. We are not fearful as we were. By the way, we were so fearful that after we the peoples, in the Declaration of Human Rights, in the first paragraph of the preamble, it is said, these human rights are to free humanity from fear. It's wonderful. But they say in the second paragraph, if you cannot exercise these human rights, you can be, they say, combined to rebellion. You can be, I do not know, in Spain, I know very well, but I do not know the translation. But it's finally, you can rebel against this. It is not, they say, not revolution, no. They say that you must react, because it's very important that all the human beings can proceed according to these human rights. No fear, now we can be actors, not spectators of what happens. We have been, during all the history, we have been only looking what happens. Let us see what they decide. These males that were always in the absolute power. And now for the first time, we can say them what must be done. Now, yes, Now, we the peoples. Because immediately after saying we the peoples, you know, that never have been the peoples in the United Nations. Never. Because from the very beginning, they only put a state. No people. And this was because once more the Republican Party of the United States doesn't like the United Nations. And now, as you know, it is even worse. Because now we are not only with a United Nations system with veto, but we are in a United Nations system that was marginated, was put aside in the 80s, during the decade of the 80s, and they said, now, too many people there. And they decided at the beginning, the G6, one group of six countries, we are 193 at this moment in the United Nations. And they decided that only six countries, the two promoters, the Republicans, United States, the United Kingdom with Madam Thatcher, and four more were the representatives of the world as a whole. We the peoples, not 193, that at least we were a lot. No, only six representatives, the G6. And then they added Canada, G7. And then they acted Russian Federation, G8. And G8, eight countries taking in their hands the destiny of the humanity as a whole. We have really, these last years from the 80s, it has been all the decisions that, in my view, have been absolutely unexpected. Unexpected, because they have said all this that represents the humanity must be put aside. And now we say no, but we must take into account that the people is dying every day of hunger. UNICEF has given us recently this terrible date. More than 10,000 children die every day from 1 to 5 years of hunger. And we are saying, well, these are collateral effects of the present neoliberal system. This is intolerable. And now we must change. And we must change. In the 2008, you know that was said, now we will have 20, the G20. What is this? How we can accept it, all this? We should never accept. We the peoples, until now, was not feasible. Now it is feasible. And when somebody will tell you, oh no, this is an utopia, it's impossible. Always the states have represented the peoples. It's not true. We have today one relic of the past in the United Nations system. It's the ILO, the International Labour Organization. And in the International Labour Organization, was already 50% of states and 50% of civil society, represented by workers' unions and patrons, etc. Well, what I tell you is that it's feasible. What happens is from the very beginning again, the Society of Nations, the League of Nations, that was established by Woodrow Wilson in the year 1919 at the beginning, and he said, here you have the Convention for Permanent Peace. From now on, no more war, because we, the members of the Society of Nations, will always be careful and we will protect peace. And you remember what happened. And this is history, and this we must learn, and this must be known. The Republican Party, when Woodrow Wilson came back to New York, they put him aside, and it's the immense incoherence that United States have never been a member of the Society of Nations created by the President of the United States. Well, now they have substituted in the 80s, I was telling you, they have substituted the United Nations with the peoples, but only G6, G7, G20. All this now must come to an end. Why? Because now with the peoples we can express ourselves. Why? Because now we know what happens in the world and we become citizens of the world. Now, because we are responsible. Again, allow me to tell you, because you can understand that I always refer to UNESCO. Why? Because I have been there so many years. And the definition of education is wonderful. They say, educated are those that are free and responsible. Fantastic. Article number one. Free and responsible. This is to be educated. To act according to your own reflections, according to your own wishes. You must listen, you must think, you must reflect, you must imagine, and at the end, you must act according to your views, to your way of action, to your style of life. This is to be free, and this is to be responsible. And now, we must be free and responsible, and we can be. But only with this, I will not today perhaps be, I am never optimistic. Because you know that it is said that one optimistic is one pessimist, ill-informed. And I am not ill-informed. But I am a person that I am hopeful. Why? Because in the last years, we can express ourselves. We know what is happening. We become citizens of the world. We have the young people already now writing, expressing their views. For the first time, we are not invisible. And if we are not invisible, we can do the impossible. This was one of the most important, in my view, statements that have been made. This was done by Bernard Lohn. Bernard Lohn was a cardiologist of the United States that, because of his activities against the nuclear threat, he was given the Nobel Laureate Award in 1985. And what he said, we must know the invisibles, because otherwise we are always saying, I am informed, but I am informed through news. And one new, because of their very nature of the news, are only extraordinary things that happen. This is not the normal thing. It's for this that is a new, otherwise will not be a new. And he said, we must close the eyes and look at the whole issue, in order to know what are the invisibles. Well, during many, many years in the history, we have been invisible. We have been anonymous. Now we can be visible. And he added at the end of his speech in this Nobel Laureate Award ceremony, he added, because in the extent that we know the invisibles, we will be able to do the impossibles. Do not forget this. This is very important. So many things that some years ago we were saying, oh, this is impossible. I have been living these impossibles. And suddenly we realized that was feasible. Why? Because there was an unexpected creative capacity of the human beings. Was feasible in the year 1988 to imagine that one prisoner, after 27 years in jail, was really, you could imagine that one prisoner called Nelson Mandela, when leaving the prison, will in 6 or 7 months to really make disappear the fanaticism, the racism, the apartheid, the terrible apartheid. No blacks, no dogs. No blacks, no dogs. This was what at this moment was in South Africa. And this man, unexpectedly, one single person, was able to do the unexpected. This is our hope. To do the unexpected is our hope. Because, I repeat, he was able of this immense capacity of conciliation. Another example, called Mikhail Sergeyevich Gorbachev. All the empire of the USSR, we have there this immense Soviet power. And suddenly, unexpectedly, all this immense power said, now all these countries become the Commonwealth of Independent States without a drop of blood. Without a drop of blood. This was unexpected. This was wonderful, yes. And it's for this that one impossible become a reality. There are so many dreams that become a reality, that are so many impossibles today that can become reality tomorrow, if we know that every human single human being is able to create, is able to imagine, is able to do the unexpected. But there is another one that in my view is the more important aspect. I was talking to you about Nelson Mandela, and I will never forget when in 1996 we were talking in Pretoria, because you know that UNESCO must support the all the associations, institutions, relations that must be for the free, those countries that they consider the movements of liberation, etc. And I was talking with President Nelson Mandela on the project of culture of peace. That is very simple. Instead of having a culture of war, to come to a culture of peace. Instead to utilize our muscles to talk and to solve the problems, talking, understanding, listening to the others, etc. This, in my view, was a very simple thing. And they said, now in UNESCO, what we must do is to try to favor the change from a culture of war to a culture of peace and understanding. And he told me, this will be impossible until we have at least an important percentage, 30, 35, 40% of women in the decision making. And I am sure that Ingeborg, that was excellent working for precisely this human women rights. Was fantastic what she did. Then what added President Nelson Mandela? He said, we, the males, we have normally, immediately, the reaction to utilize force. This is not the case in the women. The women in an inherent way, and because they want and because they have this way of action, when they do not act mimetically, he said, because it is true, there are sometimes in the history, it appears in a seldom, but it appears sometimes a woman in the decision making. And she acts mimetically, because only men have been in the power, and then he acts as a man. But when they act as a woman, there is no doubt, he told me, they always postpone. Even if they are very irritated, they always postpone the utilization of force. Well, now, at this moment, I have made one evaluation at his request of what was, what we can say, the women power in the world, in the governance of the world, in the decision making. Only 5%. This means that in 1996, the male decision was still 95%. Impossible. Well, now, in some years, in the year 2012, that was already near 20%. And now I am sure that it's growing. Well, what I would like to tell you? I would like to tell you that now we are approaching a moment in which, yes, in which we will say, we the peoples. And we the peoples is democratic multilateralism. And we the peoples mean that we must refound this wonderful design of President Roosevelt. Because he said, we need, first of all, to eat. And he founded FAO. And he founded also, well, by the way, he founded the World Bank. But you know that the World Bank at the beginning was the World Bank for Reconstruction and Development. And then, well, pump, one day they cut this name, and the second part only was the World Bank. And the World Bank was already a tool for the most incredible market power in the world. but it's for development and reconstruction, but development. This development that we were discussing in the United Nations, development must be integral. Development must be endogenous. Development must be social and not only economic. Development must be human. Development must be sustainable. Then, for this, we had this very important instrument that was the World Bank. We changed the aid by loans, loans in draconian conditions. We changed the cooperation. You know, cooperation is very beautiful. Cooperare, this means to work together. We changed by exploitation. And later on in the 80s, they changed the values, the ethical values, but the stockholders' values, they changed and they marginated the United Nations. Then was a radical change. But at the beginning, I remember that was a key word that now we must replace again, as Antonio Papisca has done in his center, that is solidarity means to share. This was the word that was the key word at the beginning of the United Nations. We the peoples, we are going to share. But not only to share with men, not only to share with the rich, not, we are going to share with all the other countries. And this fantastic design of President Roosevelt now can be a reality. And can be a reality because we, the peoples, now we are already visible, now we can express ourselves, we know what happens in the world and we have our own views, and progressively women are already in the picture. Women are already a part of we, the people, that they were not at all some years ago. What is the conclusion of all what I am telling to you? The conclusion is that we must now tell, and it's for this that I consider that is very important, as the IPB does, the International Peace Bureau does. They have organized for the next year a very important meeting, and they are doing from now on what in Mexican they say apantallamiento. They are from now on given, you know, disseminating that next year will be the solution, disarmament for development. This is a concrete proposal and is a feasible proposal, because if we are hundreds and hundreds and thousands and millions of people through the cyberspace to say now we do not like to follow anymore the plutocratic groups, the G7, now we want the world to face the challenges that we have before us, and for this we must invent, as Kennedy said, our future. And we can. The past, we must know the past, but the past is already written. What we can change is the future, because the future is not still written. But in this writing the future, we must take into account that there are some things that we must do very rapidly, because tomorrow can be late. And it's for the reason that I have suggested that could be precisely when we have this possibility of having some money for disarmament. $3 billion every day for military expenditures and for armament. This is impossible. $3 billion per day. Ah, but there is no money for AIDS in the developing country. Ah, but there is no money to have a very, very important fund for food for all the people. No. We need 60 billion in English. $60 billion to have this funded. There is no money. Every day, 3 billion. In 20 days, we have what we need to have. We have not the possibility. Yes, the IPB is right. Disarmament for development. This now must be our outcry. Disarmament for development. Because they cannot say, oh, security is very important. Yes, security is very important, but you can do the security with the 2/3 of the money that today you are utilizing. We must end with this immense power immense power of the industry of war at the worldwide level. Before concluding, I would like to tell you that one of the things that you can look in internet is the moment in which a very important president of the United States, Eisenhower, was giving the power to his successor, that was Kennedy. And you can see that once Kennedy has already been president, the other approached to him, and Eisenhower said something to very close to the President Kennedy. And what he said, I was not there, therefore I tell what I have been told that he said. He said, "Mr. President, now you are the most powerful person in the world, with the exception of the industrial military complex of the United States. We must know all these things, and we must for this applaud the initiative of the IPB, because disarmament for development, we are not against security, but what we can say that is impossible to accept that the world is deteriorating, that the capacity for a dignified life is decreasing, that people is dying of hunger, and we have all these immense expenditures. And it is for this, as I have said, and with this I conclude, that what I suggest in a joint call that the IPB, of course, has already supported, is that request, we the peoples, we must request that an extraordinary session of the United Nations General Assembly should be convened. One session in which will be weighted, of course, votation, but not veto. And in this extraordinary session, only one point in the agenda. The non-reversible issues that today represent the big challenges. Environment and social, particularly all related with development, and particularly today the emigrants, all this immense number of people that cannot live because they die of hunger in their country. And therefore, only these two problems, and I like to always add the nuclear threat. I think that is intolerable, intolerable, and is intolerable for the young people, that we have still this immense amount of nuclear power that can destroy all the planet. And you know that in Reykjavik in 1986, they were very close to have a general agreement of to end with the nuclear threat. But it was not possible because the immense power of this industrial bellic or warfare that I have told to you. In this same session, that as you know, this could be done because it's only to do this, because this is all the world that is in danger. But in the same, perhaps, it could be the proposal that the United Nations now should be refounded. Refounded because we are not only in the Anthropocene, but we are in the digital era. And in the digital era, we need a new kind of approach. We need a new kind of institutions. Well, I consider that this is a solution, and therefore, yes. Therefore, we could say at the 70th anniversary, we have the real entry into force of the with the peoples. Thank you.